Here we are for another episode of The Landing. I'm here with Yags. How are you going?
Good, thanks, Landy. Good to be back.
Definitely. And Benny?
Good to do this one in person, Landy. I'm good, thank you.
Absolutely. We're going to fire up into an NBA pod. The trade deadline ended last Friday, I think it was. There were some interesting trades to finish the deadline, as there usually is. And we're going to get stuck into those and then also give a general update on the season and where we're kind of sitting on each conference and what we're kind of looking for heading into the playoffs, because it's the All-Star break next week. And then obviously it's just a couple of months and then we're straight into the playoffs. So let's get into it. Obviously, we're going to start with the biggest NBA news at the moment, which is the Simmons-Harden trade. I'm going to read it out first of all and then get your thoughts on it. So it was Harden straight up for Ben Simmons, Seth Curry, Drummond, and two first rounders. That is 2022 and 2027. Benny, you start us off with your initial thoughts and where you see this. I'm going to ask you for your opinion on this trade for this season, first up.
For this season, if I had to get off the fence, I think that it's a win for Philly. I just think it could take Brooklyn a little bit longer to piece this together for them. Who knows how long it's going to take for Simmons to integrate into this team. And I think that the pairing of Harden and Embiid as a direct matchup for the Nets is actually not a good one. And I think that they've actually made it harder on themselves to win the chip this year. I think moving forward, though, my opinion on the trade changes a little bit.
Yeah, that's why I said this season, because I think, first of all, we're not going to really have any idea on who wins this trade, because I think it's going to take at least three or four seasons to figure it out, because obviously you've got Harden, who's an aging star, who's still definitely got some gas in the tank. However, which is interesting enough that it's Simmons for Harden, because their level of ability to get through the tougher times in a team hasn't been great throughout their careers. So I think it's going to be obviously pinned against Simmons' mental health and his ability to actually get on the court versus Harden's ability to stay fit and stay motivated to actually go for a chip. But let's go to you, Yags. What do you think in 3 years, how do you think the trade kind of plays out?
Well, I think, like, when you read that trade out, I was like, they should have fleeced a bit long term. Like, Harden, how old is Harden? 32?
Yeah, 32 or 33.
He's 33. Like, he's still a really good player, but he's not the Houston Harden. He's not like a top three guy in the league who can score 50 when he wants to. Like, he's still a good player, and he's going to work well with Embiid, you'd think. The pick and roll will be amazing. But I think long term, considering how much Ben Simmons' trade value had dropped, short term, Philly did well to get Harden for him, considering how much his value dropped. But I think long-term, the Nets have done themselves a favour, because now they've got Simmons with Durant. Hopefully Durant can, you know, bring him up, teach him, educate him about how to win and that kind of thing. And then they've got a great defender now. So I think long-term, the Nets have done very well out of this.
Yeah, well, you are really trading like 7 or 8 years difference between Harden and Simmons in age, so which is like their prime years.
Yeah.
So obviously Philly are looking for kind of like the short term win in the next 2 or 3 years. Whereas the Nets have kind of gained, first of all, like some nice assets as well. They were definitely struggling. Like, poor Patty Mills had to deal with KD out, Harden in and out, Kyrie in and out. So it was literally dead set, just our boy Patty, literally just having to like jack up like 15 threes to try and like keep the Nets on the board. Have they won yet? Are they still on a losing streak?
They beat the Kings.
Yeah, they beat the Kings.
They're the team who also made a trade.
Yeah. We'll get into that afterwards. But like, that was so they're on like a 10-game losing streak. So obviously, like, if you look at it in regards to short term, long term, you can really see kind of the difference in the trade. But I'm still a bit skeptical of Ben Simmons. Like, kind of like it's frustrating for we've talked about this on this podcast before, him being Australian. Obviously, you want to get around him, but then I've never really kind of experienced someone like happily sit out for $19 million. And like, yes, obviously mental health was involved, so you've got to be a bit careful with what you say. But at the same time, it was literally from like the event that kind of like started this was him freaking out in the playoffs and shooting 30% from the free throw line and refusing to take layoffs. So in that sense, yes, if you take Simmons at his best, it's a great trade, but you just don't really know what you're getting. And like, obviously we've seen him at the press conferences, like being quite chatty and like saying like, yeah, I'll start ramping it up. And that level of kind of being a bit flaky and whatnot can be quite harmful for a locker room. Especially with someone like KD, who is an absolute baller, absolutely loves the game more than people say, like more than anyone, that might not rub the right way with KD. So I am a bit sus of that.
And then the other thing you've got to remember is Harden, like you said before, is also a flaky dude.
Exactly.
Who's had more playoff failures than any other like superstar ever, probably. Like he doesn't have any good playoff games.
Yeah.
He's never taken over a game. Not since he was at OKC when he was young and he was a sixth man. So, like, he's got something to prove as much as Simmons does.
Yeah, so it seems like that their names kind of carry more than what they've actually done.
Yeah.
The interesting thing for me is that, though, like, when we were hypothetically moving Simmons around, like, where he could go, it was clear that to everyone that he was never going to play in Philly again. I think we all hypothetically were trying to get him into a position where he was going to be surrounded by a bunch of shooters, and I think he's managed to find himself in a situation where he's got one of the best scorers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Kyrie as well. He's only going to be there 50% of the time. But and then Patty Mills is shooting in an insane clip this year. And then Seth. The fact that they got Seth thrown into the deal as well.
Harris, when he comes back.
Yeah, if he's able to get back. So I think for Simmons, it's a fantastic fit if he's able to work his shit out. And then the other thing I think is that the Nets were missing, they were just missing defense massively. Last year, KD was doing a lot of the defending on the opposing team's main player. He played on Giannis, obviously, in that series.
Which is not what you want.
And they were throwing like Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge at players. So the fact that they've got Simmons, who in my eyes is like a top five defensive player in the league, and he can switch all five positions, I think that's sort of like a really nice match both between player and team.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that now that Simmons is on a team where he's got like two superstars around him who love to shoot, he doesn't have to worry about it as much.
Yeah.
Because at Philly, like, even Embiid this year is shooting the three well, but before this year, Embiid wasn't a guy you could throw the rock to hit jumpers.
No.
Not consistently.
And, like, looking at the in regard, like, it's a great point, but so Simmons was, like, the second option, right? Like, at Philly last year, like, Seth was there, wasn't he? Yeah, he was. But, like, again, Seth is still, he's a role player. He's not a star. Yeah, exactly. But now he's literally the freaking like fifth option on scoring or fourth option on most like lineups, third or fourth. And that is just like such an ideal setup for him. He'll have so much more confidence, new crowd. The Nets, obviously, they've got quite a pretty weak fan base. So like the Philly fans are known to being quite like harsh, similar to kind of like Collingwood fans or whatnot on their own. So I think it is really the perfect setup. And it's kind of not frustrating, but like, kind of, that he's managed to sit out and somehow end up with the absolute jackpot.
He's very lucky.
Yeah, like completely lucky that Harden wanted to go to Philly and he happened to be at Philly.
And that Harden just froths Daryl Morey more than anything.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. So obviously Daryl Morey waited a long time to make this trade because he was just like, I'm not giving him for pennies on the dollar. I'm getting a good player back. I don't care how long it has. He said he'd wait 4 years, the whole contract. So looking back on this now, do you reckon more GMs will take this approach with their star player if they want to go out? Benny?
It's a tough one because obviously the Simmons situation is so unique. You spoke briefly about the mental health part of it and with him sitting out, not playing for the team, you somewhat feel like your hands are tied. But in terms of what his aim was to do, to try and get a top 20 caliber player, if that's how you feel about Harden at the moment, then I think that's what he's gone and done. I think in terms of this season and next season, as we touched on before, I think it's a win for Philly in terms of that. He's dug himself a bit of a hole long term, but that's not what Darryl's there for.
He's never seeking that
chip he hasn't been able to get so far. So moving forward, it's obviously a case-by-case basis, and you run the risk of devaluing your asset. I personally just hope that we don't see it again, but I can't guarantee that, obviously.
It's really unfortunate because you really don't want players sitting out on their contracts. Like, they're paid millions of dollars to play basketball, be role models for kids. It's really not, like, and obviously, I'm not just talking about the Ben Simmons one. In all facets of the world, you really want to be able to, like, continue to work, stay driven, and even when times are tough, to actually just keep going hard. And I'm not saying that in regards to mental health. I'm saying that in regards to just, like, doing your job.
It is
a shame. I think it's a shame that, yeah, Ben Simmons is Australian, because we would love to get around him. But he makes it kind of hard, like, sitting out for $20 million. He gave up $20 million this season, which is just insane to think about, yeah, especially when people are, like, struggling to... They can't do that to literally to be able to feed
those
their families
and make the whole life.
Pay rent and whatever. But, like, yeah, it's definitely quite frustrating.
Two things is, hopefully, in terms of the Australian thing, like, he's with one of, if not the GOAT Australian basketball player of all time now. And we obviously
behind
saw
Gazy.
Yeah. and so hopefully you guys saw his press conference about Ben coming to the team. And, you know, if there's one guy that's going to get him onside with regards to Australian basketball and attitude towards the sport and that kind of stuff, he's obviously got a really good role model there too. And then just to go back to the potential for this to happen more often, we've sort of seen a change in NBA recently, where it's gone from players signing shorter term deals to get themselves to free agency to give themselves the power to move, but now it's sort of swung to where players will sign the big deal because the team that they're on, the way the contracts are structured, can offer them more money than other destinations, and then they'll just use player power to move after the fact. So given that, we might actually see this happen more often moving forward.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd say, though, is this is, like as Benny said, it's so unique. Because on the Simmons side of things, like, who's sitting out for that long, missing all that money, just because his coach told him to, you know, get it together and had a crack at him, and he couldn't hit an open dunk against the Hawks. And then on the Harden side of things, it's like, why would Harden want to leave a team that has two of the other, like, best 15 guys in the league? Well, because Curry is, like, strange.
In and out.
And then he's also the Harden option. Wanted to leave because of Morey. So, like, I don't think you ever see a situation like this where... Yeah. Especially where a player loves a GM that much.
It kind of has, like, yeah, all these, like, factors have come together to create this. But I also reckon, like, the thing with the Ben Simmons thing that I, like, find interesting as well is that obviously he sat out a lot of his LSU season as well, which I think, like, shows that maybe that when the, like, going gets tough, he can, like, sometimes tap out.
I think you could definitely question, like, whether he actually loves basketball or whether he's just really good at it.
He's been born as a 6'10"
exactly,
like,
he's not like KD, like you said, or LeBron. Yeah. He's not a basketball junkie.
Yeah definitely.
And as you said, on the in terms of, like, Harden's want to move, it's unique circumstances for Ben, obviously, too. Like, not often you're going to have a guy get piled into after a series on a team that has a top five player in the league that ends up being top four in the conference and competing for a championship. Like, you know, there's a lot of circumstances in the NBA right now where a player has a top 20, maybe even top 10 player, if you look at some circumstances, with players on big contracts who you might think they might want to move. But it's this rare situation where you've got a big contract player playing with someone who's playing at an MVP level and is a chance for a championship as well. Mm. And then all of the stuff that happened at the end of last season as well. It just left a scenario where two teams were in need of making a trade urgently.
Yeah, definitely. But I also find it interesting that, like, that's just kind of the environment with the NBA, with the media these days. Like, if you have a bad series, you just get piled into. Mm. You literally do. Like whether it's, like, Giannis, before he got a chip, got absolutely torched. That, like, oh, he can't make the next step. KD got it Like, Kobe got it when he couldn't win without Shaq. Like, that's just, LeBron, like, kind of, like...
LeBron got it,
like, literally, like, before. So badly. Like, got it for a decade.
Mm.
But, like, I think it's, like... That's where I just don't really find this situation as unique as it might be. I just feel like it's kind of just how it is, and he just hasn't reacted as well as, like, a lot of other players are.
I guess I'll sort of... Just, like, if I'm going off the top of my head, like, you look at someone like Dame this year, Portland starting to blow it up. Yeah, there's always been this conversation around Beal. Maybe he does love Washington, we don't know. But players of that kind of caliber, who you'd probably say are better than Ben Simmons, and well within their right to go chip hunting if they wanted to, or at least competing for one. But their circumstances are kind of different to what happened with Ben. And I'm not saying it's Ben's fault. I'm just saying that what happened to him and what's happening to the teams around the situation... sort of all just morphed into a certain
circumstance. That was, I think, like, the fact that both teams had such weird situations is what made it unique.
Yeah. But Benny, just quickly before we move on to the next trade, it actually, this sort of situation just makes me so happy to have Steph, Clay and Draymond. Like, to have three players that have been at the same team, it's so rare these days, and it is just such a treat. It is such a treat because... Being able to kind of like follow a team over 15 years of a player's career or whatever, whether it might get up to 18 with Steph, something like that. But to be able to like kind of like be on the journey of all the kind of like lows, the dips and the peaks, it's such a nice kind of like it's so symbolic of like a real kind of like life cycle. And I think that's the best part, like with sports, is when you follow a team, you get to kind of experience all these like lows of a team, rebuild, whatever, then these absolute peaks, and then like obviously you come back down and you're dealing with all these things. And I think that's like kind of the, like my one of my favorite parts about sport, and following a team is literally just about kind of following that journey. And I think this definitely disrupts that if players are more interested in like moving after like when things get tough after 1 or 2 years or like a bad season.
We're seeing it even more and more now. I'm not sure. I know Udonis Haslam is still kicking it with the Heat, but after Steph, I'm not sure who's next because Russ isn't on.
Maybe Luka?
Giannis? I'm talking in terms of current long term. I couldn't tell you.
Ball on me, Giannis. Or like. How long Giannis been in the NBA? 8?
2013 draft. So 9.
9.
So, you know, it's becoming more rare. And the fact that you've got the others to go with it is obviously a bit of a privilege.
Yeah, absolute treat. All right, let's move on to... So, Indiana and Sacramento had a very, very interesting trade. So, obviously... Sacramento received Sabonis, Justin Holiday, and Tristan Thompson. And then it was Sabonis, Justin Holiday, and Jeremy Lamb for Haliburton, Buddy Hield, and Tristan Thompson.
Yeah.
Yags, start us off with Haliburton as a talent, Sacramento as a franchise niffing it, and... Where do you see both teams in the next 3 years?
They'll both probably be in the wilderness.
Yeah, probably.
But Indiana will have hope, and they might have a top 15 guy in the league in 3 years' time. Whereas the Kings have somehow managed to make themselves even worse by getting rid of their only like young asset, who's, I think, everyone in... NBA circles loves him. And they got Sabonis, who's a very good player, but he's not like a long-term player. Like, how old is 27? I'm going to say that.
Oh, he's 25, 26, but like...
But he's not made...
He's clearly like...
He's like...
But maybe he's not a top 10 player in the league.
No, and if he's your number one option, you're like what Indiana was this year. You're like a 13th seed in the East.
Yeah.
So, I just don't like... What are they doing? It's so short. It's so frustrating.
They finally picked a good... They had a good draft pick. An amazing draft pick. So many teams. What did Haliburton go? 12.
Iowa State.
12!
Yeah.
And literally they absolutely hit the lottery. And then now they just gave it up for just like such short-term, like not even success.
Like what they should have done is traded Fox for like maybe a Sabonis, and you build around Haliburton and Sabonis, but don't give away Haliburton, who's like, I think everyone can see clear as day that he's better than Fox.
It could have easily been like, yeah, Fox healed and a couple picks for Sabonis.
Yeah.
Which then you get Sabonis with Haliburton.
Yeah. Or you like, you know, like, you get like a Bradley Beal with Haliburton and you have a good backcourt. I don't know. It's just a strange trade.
Very frustrating.
Like, they're trying to make the play-in game this year. They probably won't even make that. And if they do, they're going to finish 10th. And they're going to play to who? The 7th
Lakers.
Seed. Yeah, and get absolutely torched.
I think there's no issue with going through a period of time in the wilderness. Like, I think someone like Portland has decided to blow it up, and that's where the direction they're heading for now. Whilst you're there, you need something for your fans to latch onto, and you need to show them a direction you're heading. And I think that Haliburton was that player for the Kings fans to latch onto. He was that foundational piece, and you know, you said top 15 player before. Like, I can't say whether he will or won't get to that place. He's obviously got some great upside, but he's a like your classic point guard. Whose shot looks to be progressing really well. And he's something that the direction of your team in terms of the way you play and someone that can make everyone around him better, I think that he's something for you to build a clear direction around moving forward. And by moving off him and bringing in Sabonis, you know, the idea of bringing up Sabonis in, I don't have an issue with that. But at the expense of that one person who I felt on their roster was that direction and that foundation to build upon. It doesn't make any sense to me either. But in terms of from a Pacers perspective, I think it gives them, you know, some nice pieces. I think he works well with Miles Turner. They'll hold on to him now, I would expect.
Yeah.
They've got Duarte out of the draft, and
I think
Brogdon becomes like sort of, we were talking about this before the pod, but I think they can move off him now and use him as like a decent enough asset, because there are a lot of teams that have, like the Celtics were the first ones that came to mind, that need sort of like a point guard,
scoring point guard
that can score but can also facilitate for, like, say, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum in that scenario. But, and, you know, that can hopefully then bring something in for them. And so I think now the Pacers have sort of gone from a team that somewhat lacked direction themselves, having Sabonis and Turner on the same team, and it didn't make a lot of sense, to a team that now sort of has a couple of pieces of the jigsaw together. And, you know, healed off the bench as well is nice. And they can at least start taking their steps forward, even if they've got a couple more years to go outside the playoffs.
I think what's really frustrating as well is that Haliburton actually liked Sacramento, which I think is so important for these small market teams.
Yeah, what did he say? It was going to be the next Chris Weber or something.
Yeah. Like, if you can find it, like, in these small market teams, which, unfortunately, that's just how it works. Not every team is
especially built. A small market that's been shit for 20 years.
Like, you can sell that.
At least, like, other small markets. Like, at least Portland's been the players for the last 10 years.
Definitely. But, like, he literally liked Sacramento. Mm. It was a young gun looking to, like, make a splash in the league, but you still give him up. It's just like, it's just mind-boggling. It's so frustrating.
Like, as Benny said, like, it's okay to be in the wilderness, but, like, Sacramento are in the wilderness without a plan. Like, at least the Pacers now, as Benny said, like, have a good young piece that they can build around and their fans can get around. But now the Kings are in this, they're in the wilderness, and they'd be, like, if you had power rankings of, like, where you, like, potential and future, like, who's got a good future, that would be 30th.
Like, okay, see, for example, like,
they've got second picks, or third bottom, Gideon, but, yeah, Shea,
something to build around with a bunch of picks. And, like, the other thing is, I know OKC have moved off their players and stuff like that across a period of time, but it's not as if the Kings have a great track record of nailing these picks. Like, you touched on it before, Haliburton fell to them. It was almost as if, like,
a bit of luck.
They, you know,
They
still stopped the fall. They still were able to acknowledge him at 12, but it wasn't as if they took some bloke that was ranked around 10 at 3. Like, they've missed on so many of those blokes throughout time. They had got one, and he was one that loved the franchise, as you said, and was something that added direction and foundation to build off for them. And to move off him just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, this is the first good trial pick in 10 years, since Boogie.
Yeah.
First good one in 10 years, and, like, he's gone.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. So let's move on to the MVP conversation, which, as Yags has been saying in the group chat every couple of days, it changes every three games.
It does.
Which I definitely agree with. So what I reckon we do here is, do you want to maybe give our top fours?
Mm-hmm.
Each of us. Who wants to start? Yags, you want to start?
Oh, yeah, I've got Embiid one. I think I said like a month ago that he was hunting. He was a bit of a smoke.
You did, yeah.
And then he started getting really hot. And then they've gone from being sort of like on the fringe of the playoffs to being a contender now, so Harden.
I'm pretty sure if I looked in the group chat, he was either $7 or maybe he might have actually been $10 when you sent it.
Mm.
And you're like, if there's someone like value in this list, because we're looking at like the odds of the MVP. Mm. You're like MVP Embiid at like $10 might be the play, and then yeah, he's piled in since then.
And I don't have a cent on it, Dan, sadly. And then I probably have Giannis at two, just because he seems to keep reminding us, like against the Lakers the other day, which is a TV game, that like he's the best player in the league. The Bucks have not had like full health this whole year, and they're still probably the favorites for the chip. I think most people seem to think they're coming out of the East. I'd have Jokic three, purely because what he's done without Murray and Porter, like without him, there. Like if you look at the rest of that team, that starting five, like they're the most random bunch of names, like Monte Morris and like Aaron Gordon, like they're
Will Barton.
They seem like the nicest guys. Yeah,
actually, very Will Barton.
Campazzo.
Pablo Prigioni.
Yeah.
He's the truth. Yeah, dude. He reminds me of Campazzo.
And then I reckon fourth I'd have DeRozan, who's just been incredible this year.
Fourth. But
DeRozan like is trending upwards. And if he drops 40 in the next two games, then he's probably winning first. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, Jars around the mark. There's a lot. Steph.
There we are, finally. I was waiting for it. Yeah, nah, strong list. Benny?
I'd have
Chris Paul.
And we're recording this on the 16th of February. And so I say that because I think my pick actually changed today. I think it was relatively close between Embiid and Giannis. And I sent a message into the group today. Couldn't find an answer to it. But when the MVP from that season has played, have they ever lost by 40-plus? In a game that season, and I would love to know the answer. So if anybody can find that, let me know. But in the Celtics,
do you reckon that is the tree like enough to like?
But
to it, a big rival,
if it's close, right? So I thought it was close already, and Embiid had 19 and got smacked.
And they also lost to the Suns last week.
Had 50,
and then Giannis just went and had 50. And so, if I know they only played the Pacers, but they still only won by 8. And so they needed every inch of that 50. So, yeah. And I didn't actually look to see if both Holiday and Middleton played. But so I think, Holiday yeah, did. But yeah, so Holiday. I think they're, didn't. I think they're did. Close. But I think may have only just swung to Giannis, but that's a coin flip. I've got DeRozan third. I think that what he's done is, some of his shooting percentages are ridiculous. He's bringing back the mid-range. They've been by far the most crippled by injuries, I reckon, in the NBA. Maybe the Clippers, like, in terms of big names, but in terms of overall...
Or Denver?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think in terms of amount of play, like, sheer volume,
Caruso, Levine... Patrick Williams, Ball.
Yeah, like they're starting to.
That's like the whole starting five.
And so they're starting to go really deep down into their roster, and they've still got a better record than the Bucks. They've still got a better record than Philly, Still got a better record than the Nuggets, which I think has to be considered, especially in a deeper division conference. Sorry. So I've got him 3. And then for 4th, I think I would go Jokic just on sheer volume. I'm not a massive fan of going towards players on lesser sides. I think what Steph did last year for the Warriors was a better year than what Jokic is having right now. And, you know, he was 3rd, so I think that's about, you know, as good as he can do, as good as he can be. Yeah, and I think the reason I probably edge Jokic 4th is because, like, you know, Steph's had his slump, and Memphis went 11-2 without Ja so far. So, in terms of that, in terms of that valuable that valuableness we talk about towards the team, Memphis are clearly quite deep and capable, even though he's been playing really well.
Interesting. Well, I have Embiid 1st, because I just think he's having an absolute breakout year. He's had no Ben Simmons the whole season. Hasn't had play with Harden yet. Their second best player has been Seth Curry.
Yeah.
That, like, has been outstanding.
Yeah.
Actually, Harris has been decent recently.
Harris had a good month. But, yeah, Maxey.
Either way, they're all pretty, like, they're not, like, bona fide stars. They're more, like, they're that, like, kind of, like, what, third or fourth tier of NBA player. But I honestly reckon Seth Curry's been probably the most important player with Embiid, just based on how he works like well with him in the pick and roll, and the pick and pop. But then I have Giannis 2nd, and I actually have a few questions for you about Giannis, or mainly the Bucks. So, what are the Bucks? What, 5th?
They're currently 3rd in the East.
3rd, okay. It's changing every day.
The top 7 so close.
I don't think the Bucks are as much of a threat for the championship, because I think last year they got a somewhat pretty decent run for their championship. Like, I would definitely have them in the East. I reckon I'd have them 3rd or 4th. Ranking, because a lot of people are saying, like, oh yeah, the Bucks are just like waiting for their time. I just think, first of all, they had a good matchup, so they beat the Hawks.
But they beat the Nets
with Harden on like half a hamstring,
and no Kyrie.
But then they just beat them.
Yeah, exactly.
A big toe, I believe it was.
And then they had the Hawks. he didn't play.
Out of depth in that.
He didn't play, did he?
He missed. No.
What game did he hyperextend his knee? Do you remember he badly hyperextended?
It was like the end of the series, because wasn't it like he was gonna? They thought he might miss the start of.
Yeah, and they were waiting for the West Series to end.
Yeah, so I think it was like it might have been like the last game, final game.
And I think they match up very well with Phoenix in the finals. So my kind of point is, yes, Giannis has been outstanding, literally like better than ever. Like he had 50-14-8 today, which is disgusting. But I think even with a full roster, I don't think I have them 3rd in the East, behind.
We'll get to the list.
Oh, yeah, wait.
We'll segue.
I'll go back to the MVP, so I'm carrying on. And then, yeah, I have Jokic 3rd, then I have Steph 4th.
Okay.
Because I think Steph has had like some bad shooting nights the last 3 weeks, but it's still been like 4 months of the season.
Last 9 games have been really good.
Yeah, but like he had that like slump, and obviously everyone
where he was way down.
And you guys
have lost. Like,
we're the second team in the West. Like people were saying beforehand, people weren't even questioning if the Warriors were even going to be contenders.
No, they weren't.
People were saying like, oh, their car, like Clay came back off those 2 injuries.
No one said that. Everyone thought you were going to be around the mark.
That's not true.
I don't think they had them
second in the West.
Would have been like
Benny and I would have.
Lakers above you probably.
But yeah, I think Benny and I would have maybe had them.
We're probably like
I would have had 4th, 3 or 4.
I think we're probably like 4th.
I had you above Phoenix.
I think I said to Benny like best case 4th.
Yeah, I think most people, like I'm just going majority, had. In no particular order, Lakers,
Clippers,
Phoenix, and Utah above us. And then, well, we already knew Kawhi was out, so true. I don't think the Clippers were.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought we
were... People probably would have put Denver above.
Yeah,
fit. Maybe Denver, yeah, but yeah. Jamal also missing a lot of the year as well. Yeah. Mm.
But yeah, yeah, I think...
Yeah, fourth, fifth, yeah. Whatever, yeah.
I think Steph's... Yeah, no, I think Steph's right up there. It's just such an even year. Like, yeah. Steph could average 40 for the next 2 weeks and then he'd be the MVP.
Like, yeah, the other thing is, like, the MVP is so much... of it is narrative and recency bias. Like, you got to remember, through the first like 2 months of the season, Steph was ahead by the length of Flemington's
strike. Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, he went through his...
Yeah, my Twitter box on Steph at 850 was looking so silent.
And so, yeah. Oh. So that's why, like, we could look back on the MVP at the end of the season and talk about, like, oh, Embiid led for so long through the middle sector of the season, then ended up finishing fifth.
Well, last year it was like that, then Embiid hurt his knee.
Yeah.
And then he literally...
And that's the other thing. A lot of people actually aren't picking Embiid to win because they're just expecting him to miss a portion of time at some point. Yeah,
yeah, it was,
I think, well, but your DeRozan argument sort of made me think I've been harsh and DeRozan having him fourth. Because if he... Like, he's obviously a very good player, but he's not a superstar. Like, he's never been a superstar in terms of a name.
Well, ball on after this year, you have to come.
Yeah, yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, if he was already a superstar, he might be, like, number one in most people's eyes. Yeah. Because he's always been, like, that Milan guy who couldn't get it done in Toronto, and then he played in San Antonio when they were not that good. And obviously, like, him under Pop is what's made him this better player.
Definitely.
I reckon.
Yeah. Definitely. And I looked at... Landy and I were having a discussion about this, because Landy was on the DeRozan trade. But all the media...
As documented on the landing. As documented on the...
Media said it was the worst trade ever.
Free agent.
You heard it here first on the landing.
Yeah. All the media roasted it as the worst contract given out in free agency. And so, like, if you look at the totality of his year and the narrative that's changed across it with his performance, if he keeps this up, I think he's a great shout.
Yeah.
Definitely. All right, so that's our MVP rankings. So let's get on to... I want to talk top four teams in each conference. And the way we're going to do this, I can't go through each team and, like, chat it out, but I kind of want to, like, we'll have, like, a different list, and I can we just talk about the differences and similarities with that. I'm going to start off with my East teams. So I've got the Miami Heat as the first seed in the East. Let me just preface this by saying that's not ranking-wise in regards to how they finish on the season. I'm talking about best teams, what I think will make...
So you think that East are making the finals? The Heat are making the finals out of the East?
Yep.
Word vomit.
The East are making the finals. They... Yes, I'm talking about, like, best teams in the conference as opposed to what it will finish. Because obviously the Nets are 8th at the moment in the conference. I just don't think they're going to finish that. And, like, even if they finished 8th today, I still wouldn't... I would still have them in my top 4. There's
too much doubt around them.
Yeah. So I have the Heat... And then I have the...
Do you want to go 1-1-1 or do you want to do your 4?
Let's do our 1-1-1.
Yeah, 1-1-1.
All right, we should do our 4-4-4, 3-3-3, 2-2-2, 1-1-1.
Build it up. Well, I've already done 1-1. That's okay, though.
We can work our way down. Fourth will probably be more interesting anyway.
Yeah, yeah, all right. So, yeah, so my first pick of the 2022 East Best Team Draft is Miami Heat. Go on, Yags.
I've got the Bucks.
The Bucks
going to the finals again.
Yeah, I'm with you there. The Bucks as well.
Yeah. I just don't think... I think
they're the best player in the land. That's all you need to know. Yeah. If you're doubting anything else, then it's like LeBron 5 years ago.
The other thing is you got to think about the mentality change you have after you break through for that first title. The regular season just doesn't matter. You
couldn't give a shit.
Like, and that's why. As a Warriors fan, what's going on right now is not much of a concern to me. If they start getting their shit together with 15 games to go, I'm sweet. And as long as I've got Giannis on the team, I've still got a big three that's capable of playing defense, an on-ball guard, and a team that's done it before. You know, they have got a couple of injuries. They've been through COVID and stuff like that.
Saw Connaughton got injured today as well.
And, you know, that might give them a bit of a tougher run of it through the regular season. But once again, if they can get their health together, I still think they're the team to beat.
Fair enough. No, it's like obviously, like given they won last year, like they are technically the team to beat. But I just think that I think the Heat are better. And my reasoning would be is that given the Heat have Bam, who's an absolute defensive weapon, and like obviously they always say like you want to have the best player in the series. But my counter to that would be Bam is so good defensively that you could that he matches up quite well with Giannis. Obviously, no one really matches up with Giannis at the moment because he's an absolute freak. But Bam is able to somewhat negate some of Giannis's effect, and then you've got like the Heat having a very like extremely deep roster with good shooting. Butler been to the finals before, kind of knows what's up.
Them have because they went.
Yeah, exactly. They kind of like, and I think that experience is very valuable as well. Yep. You got Kyle Lowry who's won a chip.
Spoelstra's a freak.
Yeah, and then you've got obviously Tyler Hero. Duncan Robinson, good shooter. And then you've got... Who else? You got the
They picked up PJ Tucker as well.
And if, imagine if Victor Oladipo comes.
He's the wild card.
Yeah, give you a
he's
nice...
Like, he's like no risk, all reward.
Yeah. Well, no, could... Yeah, yeah.
He's, yeah, yeah, like he's already there. Like if he just can be like a 15 off the bench guy.
Yeah, their version of like Jordan Poole.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, just something to give but you...
But I just think that like based on that, I just think that... able to somewhat negate some of Giannis's effect, and I think, and I back Butler, Lowry, Hero, over Middleton, Holiday, and whoever you want to pick.
Okay.
Other than
Giannis, Lowry withstanding. Last year they played in the playoffs in the first round. The Bucks beat them in overtime in the first game, and then in game two they beat them by 34. In game three they beat them by 29. In game four they beat them by 17, and they swept
that. Lowry. Lowry didn't play.
I'm saying Lowry was standing.
So the addition of Lowry's got to make up.
I think it's huge.
That,
I think it's
but
huge.
Like, they the Bucks had their measure and they had no answer for Giannis or Middleton.
I think I know. I think Lowry's massive. Because that's your third piece though.
He's not scoring the basketball like he used to as well. That's the other thing.
But I think his value is more than just scoring.
Yeah, he's it's like Chris Paul. It's like well beyond stats.
Yeah,
he is. Yeah, but at the same time, like I'm a massive Goran Dragic man. Like I think he, aside from like the intangibles that Lowry offers in terms of basketball play, I'm not sure there's like that massive of a drop off. I think that in terms of you know Lowry's going to get you those few charges and stuff like that, and he's been there before, and you know maybe he's a
that's pretty
a shoots at a slightly high I mean it could be he shoots at a slightly high clip, but I just not because you're just going off intangibles and stuff like that, I think statistically there probably isn't that much of a difference.
Except Lowry was like best on in a game six against the Warriors.
But if you're going, but if you talk, but I'm only applying this to a situation.
I was best on.
I'm only talking about if you're applying this to a situation where you've lost three of those games, as you said, by pretty much 20 plus points. Yeah. Is intangibles going to make up that?
No.
And the other thing is like, in terms of the Heat, you obviously maybe they address the Bucks scenario. There's obviously so many other teams they've got to get past though, whether it's Embiid.
Yeah.
You know, can they stop KD? Whatever. So,
yeah.
We'll get to
those. The East is going to be a gauntlet no matter
what. Yeah, I'm so keen for it. Literally.
Like a butcher.
The Nets, as I said, the Nets are the 8 seed. So right now, like assuming they're like obviously taking out the playing games, it'd be Miami Brooklyn first series, first round series, which is just ridiculous.
That'd actually be good to say.
So my second team is the Chicago Bulls. Yags?
The Philadelphia 76ers.
Yags and I are not offering a lot of difference here. Yeah, the 76ers as well, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So you think that obviously you think the Harden and Embiid will work pretty properly?
I would have had them two before Harden trade. That's how good Embiid's playing.
Jeez, really?
Wow. I wouldn't have had that.
there we are.
Some difference.
Finally.
I think it's a close to the perfect match in terms of the player to go with Embiid, like the amount of stuff that they can do.
You can see him lobbing it up to the rim like 100 times.
And, you know, you can feed...
Like he used to do to Capella.
Yeah.
Nasty. like he can feed it down into Embiid and they can clear it out, pick and rolls. Harden can get back to his, you know, his travel step back. And then I think that as much as like Maxey and Seth have been great, I think that Harden showed his ability to be that facilitator point guard, which is really what they lacked. It'll be interesting to see if they suffer a little bit on the depth side of things.
That's what I was about to say.
And that would be my only question with them, I think. But for the most part, if Harden can even replicate like what he was doing last year for Brooklyn, like don't forget, middle of last year, he was like MVP conversation, like ahead of Durant at times. Yeah. And then when Durant went down, he was like right there.
Yeah.
And he was like a walking triple-double. He wasn't scoring to the heights he was at Houston, but with Embiid playing at the level he is, if he can be that facilitator type point guard, I think that, you know, they're going to have two of the best three players on the court in most series, which
and
is...
And they've both never played with a player of the caliber of each other. Yep. Like, Embiid's never had a great player like Harden play with him. And Harden's never played with a great big like Embiid.
Yeah, CP3 wasn't playing at the level that Embiid's playing at.
No.
And they, also went a match.
There was another point guard.
Yeah, and they went the match that these two are, yeah.
I guess my comments on that is, one, I think when you make a big trade like that, yes, obviously, I feel like they do fit somewhat. But, one, Harden's continued to be, like, quite inefficient this year and, like, showed elements of being unfit. That doesn't go over, that doesn't change overnight. Yes, he might be in a better situation and work harder, but you can't literally just immediately get into like 2019, 2020 Harden like that, right?
Mm.
Secondly, obviously my Bulls pick is hinged on them being healthy, as we said before. But I think all of these picks have to be based on like everyone being healthy. You can't
You can't predict injuries.
Even though, to be fair, we can probably predict an Embiid injury, so maybe like, I'm taking that into account. But I just think the Bulls bat deep, very on DeRozan. And I think if the Bulls faced the 76ers, I like the Bulls' scoring options over Philly's based on their depth. And I think, what's Philly's defense like, do you reckon?
I'd say it's just above average. Like, and it's like Matisse has been unreal this year. And I'd say Maxey is like capable.
Yeah.
But and Embiid's like still like an unreal, like probably like what top two center defensively.
Yeah.
As a whole unit, like how that's going
to
work, I'm not sure. Like Harden
checks in and checks out.
Well,
now they've got
like the
worst defender ever.
but
he hates it.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? I've forgotten.
How they're going as a team. As a collective.
No, I lost it.
Lost it. I'll bring it back.
By the way, let's move on to number three. So my third team is the Bucks. So we don't really need to say anything more about that. Go on.
I've got the Heat. I think they'll probably make like the conference semis. Maybe the finals.
Yeah.
Conference finals if they... But I think they don't have any weak spots, but they don't have enough firepower.
Yeah.
To get through some of these teams that have top three players in the league.
Fair enough. Benny?
The thought came back to me. I will get the two things that the Bulls struggle with though. Vucevic can't stop a nosebleed. So I think Embiid would like and Giannis and stuff like that would fucking torture that. And because Patrick Williams is out for the season.
No, he's not.
Yeah,
he's probably back. He's coming back.
If he's back, that changes things.
I've read he's back.
I'm pretty sure he's.
I've read he's back.
If he comes back, that's big. But at the moment, they're getting torched on the wing defensively. So like players like Giannis again, but KD can be an issue for them. So,
but I think it's interesting. Like the way that you're picking your teams compared to mine is very based on like I'm. Seeing it as a team, you're seeing it as very like your top player or like top
counts,
which is
I'm still a big believer in like how many of the best four players in the series do you have? like.
But like, I think
that's what the NBA is always
because you can see the Heat. You can see the Heat and the Bulls are somewhat similar in a sense of like very deep, but they don't have the best player in the series.
And that's why I don't have either of them.
That's where I differ.
But if the Bulls were for health, that would be a different story because I think that they have game changers like Caruso, who might be off the bench or as like your fifth best option.
I think you have to be that unreal at defense to have any kind of chance.
Like a Pistons, Pistons type.
Yeah, like Spurs when Kawhi was like the best defender in the league.
And so...
Oh, yeah. But you still also had like Tim Duncan.
Yeah, but he was old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're asking a lot of the Bulls, especially with a team... I suppose DeRozan and Caruso have playoff experience, but then you've got like Lonzo, LaVine doesn't have a lot, and Vucevic. Orlando, was he?
Yeah, he might have had some.
Maybe
some. Like first round.
Yeah, first round. Swept. So
yeah.
Dude, when Augustine.
Raptors in 2019. I do love the Bulls, and I think that if they didn't have luck this year, that. It's not the be-all and end-all for them. My third team, I have so far nothing really interesting. My third team is still the Nets. At any given day, Kevin Durant's the best player on the planet. And I actually, despite thinking that Philly is a harder matchup for them now, as we touched on earlier, I think that the Nets still got better. And... I think that they got a bit better defensively, and I think that and the addition of Drummond, like, I don't think that could be underrated. Blake. It's someone with six fouls to throw at some of these people we've been talking about through the Eastern Conference.
And get a board.
Exactly. And they've been trash at getting boards, offensive, defensive. Like, they just concede so many additional points they don't need to.
You can just, like wave Blake. Get him out of there.
Don't
need him.
So on Blake, right?
So... I think that, with the ability to still get a bucket so easily, like you've been talking about with some of these other teams, I still think they'll be okay.
Fair. And my fourth team is the Nets. I think the reason I have them lower is because I feel like with the Nets, the last 2 years has always just been like, woulda, coulda, shoulda. They've never actually been able to have all their players on the court. Like, how many games did they play? Like 16 or something? 16.
Unreal.
Which is just
13 and 3 in those games.
Yeah. Which is just ridiculous. KD coming off a knee injury, never a good sign. Kyrie's there 50-50. And Ben Simmons, I just question his drive to be one of the best players in the league.
The only thing that could advantage him is if they do finish like 8th, then Kyrie will play more games than he would. Because they'll be on the road the whole time.
But yeah, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah. No. And that's why I don't have
them. The other thing for the Nets is that they don't have home court advantage. Hmm. So playing away just means nothing.
And when they're at home, they're like, if they're playing against a Philly it's going to be an away game.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like the Chargers.
Who's your four?
I've got the Cleveland Cavaliers. Love for my young Bucks. I just think that they're kind of like Memphis of the East. Maybe not quite as good. But they've just got this like energy about them. They have incredible chemistry. They obviously don't have the superstar names yet. Mobley will be one of those guys, and Garland's well on his way. Of the other teams that we've mentioned, but I think that just their sort of chemistry and their bravado, the way they're playing, and I think Mobley obviously is a defender. Like, he could be someone that could slow down Giannis. That's how good he is defensively. Or a KD. So I think that they could win a series, maybe make the conference finals if they got lucky.
Yep.
So I've got them fourth, and I just have the Nets out purely because I have no idea what's going to happen with them. Next year they'd be like my number one team, but
fair enough
for this year. Cavs,
Yags. I mean, Benny.
I've got the Celtics.
Jeez.
God isn't trying to smiling at home.
I think they've just figured something out. And it's okay when you get a new coach, and you expected to build the next year when you got the new coach in, and things didn't work out initially, but he's found his feet and he's found his rotation, and you know it has taken them to go to a smaller rotation to be able to do it, but it's working for them now. And I think the key to them, I'm a big Jaylen Brown man myself. I think he needs to be the one in that team for them to
go deep. Do you think he's a better player?
I think he's a better player than Jason Tatum, yeah. And I think that for the Celtics, I'm bullish on them because of what we've sort of been talking about.
So inconsistent.
They both are.
But like but Tatum's definitely Tatum's definitely more consistent than Jaylen. Like, yeah. I like Jaylen Brown more, but it's really hard to. I don't think I can put Jaylen Brown above Tatum yet.
I just think that Jaylen Brown has a lot more in him that's just untapped. Maybe yeah. Tatum is better at the moment, but I just think Jaylen Brown has
Jaylen Brown has much, Kawhi. Yeah, maybe not that quite good, but as a two way guy,
like
if you got more upside, I'd say.
Like if I said to you both right Natalie. Now, if I said to you both right now. You have to trade one. Who are you keeping to build around? Who are you answering with?
I'm still keeping Tatum.
Yeah, I don't know. Like it changes a nut tonight, but I might be with you on Brown.
Yeah.
I think because he's such a good defender and he's longer.
And so I think what we were talking about before about the defensive side of things, like there's some of the metrics on the Celtics recently in this recent stretch that they've had, you know, the number one defensive side in the league. And I think that, you know, it makes sense. Like, you know, you got Smart. Like Horford's always been like
Bob capable. Williams.
Bob Williams is like actually like one of the best rim protectors in the league, and he's statistically when they've had Bob Williams, Jason Tatum, and Jaylen Brown on the court, it's the best defensive rated trio in the league currently. So
that's good start.
And what we were talking about before, like you need to be like an outstanding defensive unit if maybe you're not going to be not going to have the best player or best two players or two of those best four players or so in the matchup. And I think that some of the signs I've seen from them defensively, I think means they're going to be in these games. They have a great track record versus Embiid. We saw that today.
That game was ridiculous.
And I just think that as a bit of an upside pick, I think that they're slightly better defensively than like maybe a Chicago, as much as I love them. And you know, teams like the Heat have a great track record in terms of like.
So you have Heat in the top four?
No, I mean it could. I tossed and turned between them and the Celtics.
There's like eight good teams in the East.
Yeah. Honestly, you could go Raptors, you could go the Cavs, you could go the Heat. Honestly, anyone in that top eight you could have in your top four, and I wouldn't argue with you. I think, and like the Heat have, you know, good foundation, good coach, good culture, all that kind of stuff. Great track record for getting deeper into the conference playoffs. So, you know, you're probably right there, but I just think that maybe for a bit more scope, you know, if this is something that becomes a bit of continues to happen more regularly. Then, you know, maybe the Celtics are onto something here.
Fair enough. Like it. All right, let's get into the West. Ben, do you want to start off with your number one?
The Warriors. And for the precise reason that I'm just not overly concerned about the Suns from perspective that what I saw in the first three matchups between the two teams... I'm pretty much just looking at this as a Suns versus Warriors argument for 1 and 2. Like I would presume you both are, even though I know Yags isn't. I think the main thing is that, and Draymond explained it really well in his podcast, you're going to struggle to beat the Warriors in a 7-game series if they focus their attention on taking away Booker and Chris Paul. And obviously you can't fully take away them, but if Ayton's having 30 points... I don't know if that's going to be enough. And so I'm quite content once Draymond gets back, you get the 6 fouls of James Wiseman, even if, you know, that's all he's being used for, an extra body just to tie Ayton out across the series. And then you've got bodies like Clay, Wiggins, Iggy, Gary Payton, Draymond, Otto Porter, all to throw at Booker.
Toscano Andersons.
I don't think he probably cups the rotation once
we get there. Sweet one.
I just think that I'll take that plus the combination of Steph, Clay, Draymond.
And Steph Curry.
And yep. Steve Kerr.
Agreed.
I'm although, I, to be honest, like, Monty Williams deserves his props.
But so. Steve Kerr is, like, he's a Hall of Fame coach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I agree. I've got Warriors 1 as well. Yags?
I've got the Phoenix Suns. Nasty. I just can't stop. You can't look at what they've done this year and be not incredibly impressed. They've lost 10 games? 11 games?
10.
Like, they're on track to be, like, a Warriors 67-15, that first bracket, it was Stephen Clay, that kind of year, which is incredible. I don't think anyone really saw them repeating what they did last year. I think everyone thought that, like, you know, they sort of caught the Lakers off and Warriors weren't healthy and that this year they would sort of slide to like a fifth or a sixth seed. But they've just been incredible. Chris Paul is playing as good as basketball he's ever played and should be in the top six or seven for MVP. Booker, as much as he is an interesting one for me, because I don't fully like rate him as like a top 10 player, but he plays like that. And then Ayton, despite them taking him over Doncic and Young, has turned out to be a really good draft pick. And then they just bat really deep with, you know, your Michael Bridges, Crowders.
Spelled with a K.
Spelled with a K.
Mikal.
And then, like, you know, Cam Johnson's really good. Cam Payne is streaky. But there's just something about them. And as you guys said, Monty Williams.
Torrey Craig was a nice pickup as well.
Yeah, so I think they're deserving of being the JaVale one seed. McGee. And you're going to have to go through a tough, the Valley, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
A tough crowd. It might not be as good as the Oracle used to be, but it's an intimidating place to go nonetheless.
Yeah. No, fair enough pick. I really like the Suns. I've met Chris Paul. Very on him. Taller than him, but
name drop.
Yes. I think the Suns, this is like very close. Like I reckon I'm obviously
it's going seven that series.
Yeah. I'm biased because I've just seen so much more success from Steph, Clay, Draymond compared to Chris Paul, Booker, Ayton. And I just think we bat deeper and I think they somewhat cancel each other out. Those top three players on either side. So I just think I take our first of all, Steph has historically always dominated Chris Paul. And things don't like that don't just change overnight. Especially when Chris Paul's being 3 years older. I just take the Warriors over the Suns.
Yeah. I think the other thing is the fact that, you know, Wiggins has still never played with Clay and Draymond on the court. 14 games ago, he'd never played with Clay ever. Now he's played with Clay, but he's never played with Clay and Draymond. And one thing Landy and I were talking about before this podcast that the Warriors are struggling with at the moment is Draymond's that second ball handler, and Clay's currently doing a little bit, and he's obviously been given a license to get his shots up at the moment, but vintage Clay is what we saw in that fourth quarter against the Lakers when he's like spotting up and he's just in rhythm shooting. He hasn't been able to settle into his normal role yet. And we just haven't seen that. And as we touched on earlier with some of these teams, like the Warriors won't be too phased about finishing second, having to play like they've done that against Houston and whatnot. So I think it's more important to Phoenix to try and get that first seed. But in terms of Phoenix, they're obviously my second. That you can't really say any too much negative about them. If you did overall in terms of favourites across both conferences for the chip, I like the team, unless you get a real mismatch type, like the Warriors maybe with a big coming out of the East, like they're probably going to come out lost a lot less fatigue. So, the Phoenix Suns are doing, they're firing on all cylinders. They bat deep, well coached. And they've got really fantastic clutch minutes statistics in terms of their ability to get a basket in those minutes. So if the games do go down to the wire, they generally have a pretty reliable source of scoring. So they're obviously one of the better teams. It's just, I'd say, mostly on history that what gives one the edge over the other.
Mm. Yep, fair enough. Yeah, Phoenix are my second team as well. Yags?
We're the Grizzlies.
The Grizzlies, number two.
The Memphis Grizzlies. And
this is your last podcast in Atlanta.
I just think that they're on one of these like waves of momentum. This young team that could almost be unstoppable. I can definitely see them making the finals, perhaps winning the finals.
That.
I just think they've got Jar is your Joe Burrow of the NBA. He's like this young guy that is not scared of anyone or anything. And then the team around him
except
is
Aaron Donald. No,
I think anyone would be scared of Aaron Donald. I think that they've got this amazing, like we've been speaking about teams that have depth. You know, the Heat, the Warriors, the Suns. But geez, there you go, Dave. The Grizzlies. And since, I guess, maybe a third of the way through the season, they would have must have close to the best record since then. Like, they've just been on a tear.
Yeah, second best of Phoenix, I think, yeah.
Yeah. And they're just, like, they're incredible to watch. They're heaps of fun. And I just think when you've got a player like Ja who just seems to not, like, have any, like, fear or, like, he just doesn't seem to care. And, like, at the moment, you're going to play them in the second round of the West.
Mm.
And like, I just think that'll be an incredible series that might hinge on who's the best player in the series, and it's going to be between Steph and Ja. And I think that I've just got the Grizzlies edging that out, and they could get the second set. They're only a game behind you, I think. Two games behind.
Three.
So it's getting tight.
One and a half games.
It's getting tight. Yes.
I've got the Grizzlies three.
Yeah. Me too.
I just think that last year, you know, they didn't really get enough playoff experience. They haven't had that.
Mm.
It's massive. And it goes a long way to figuring out for these players what works, what doesn't work. And not just for the players, but for the coaches as well. What do we run in during the season that we can't run? Or what's our go-to when things get close at the end of matches? And I think that the other thing is that I just don't trust players like Jaren Jackson Jr. How's Desmond Bane going to shoot? Is he going to shoot at the same clip? You know, maybe Ja can be the best player in the series. I'm not ruling that out, but there's just not enough there to edge.
And they're still getting Dylan Brooks back, mind you.
True.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and they've got
all Draymond Green back. I just think that like we're so deep. Like you said, like I would argue the Warriors are deeper than the Grizzlies. I don't think that's that outrageous.
Those three top teams in the West are probably the deepest teams in the league.
I have the Grizzlies three as well.
Toronto's pretty deep.
This is a
Benny, four.
Good question. I mean, this one's tough because like the middle of the West has a lot of teams that are relying on players coming back. So, like, you know, if Kawhi and Paul George were to come back for the Clippers, I could say them. I personally don't think Kawhi's coming back, so I'm not going to. PJ might come back, though. I think the fourth best team in the West is the Nuggets, because I do know Jamal Murray's coming back. Who knows with Michael Porter Jr., but I think Jamal Murray...
He's out for forever.
He might be, but I think Jamal Murray and Jokic is better than the Jazz. I just have no belief in the Jazz whatsoever in the playoffs. Luka, unfortunately, just has no help. He could honestly average 45 for a series. I could see that, but he's, as we saw against the Clippers, like, they traded their second best scorer. Guess, so, yeah.
For nothing. That was a weird trade as well.
Yeah,
get something good off the Wizards.
They got
Davis Bertans.
Like they got Dinwiddie.
Yeah. True, but he's not. But I don't even know if that's a decent fit.
And like, he's like a shitter version of Brunson. He's a really good point guard.
So yeah, that was a strange one. That maybe they're making a move for the summer in terms of
Luka with them.
They were doing that. They're clearing
up. Yeah. So yeah, as I said, I can't factor in the Clippers because I don't think Kawhi's coming back. I'm pretty sure Jamal's coming back. And I think that Jamal and Jokic, plus what the Nuggets have got going and their history, they've been to the conference finals recently. I think that topples the other contenders in terms of the Jazz and the Mavericks. And no, I do not think the Lakers are involved in this conversation.
No. 5 games under 500
Yeah, I Benny, the Chiefs said my exact reasoning, and I'm going with the Nuggets number 4 as well. Same list. Yeah,
I actually wrote down the Clippers because of potential for Kawhi to come back. But when we're going through this podcast and we're talking about the MVP race, if the MVP race started a month ago, Luka Doncic might be number 1. Yeah, so I'm going to say the Mavs are my 4th pick purely because of his talent. Like, I think the 4th team in the West is a long way off the top 3.
Yeah, agreed.
But I think that if he was to average 45 a game, then he would scare the shit out of any team he was playing.
And to go back
for that reason, I would have them 4th.
Yeah, to go back to the West rankings as well, if you want to go further into it in terms of like external circumstances that could help you pick Phoenix as your favourite to come out of the West, the fact that 2 and 3 are going to have to play each other and soften each other up before they then play the Suns. Like, the Suns are looking at playing maybe Luka, at worst, a Jokic and Murray in the second round. You know, they're going to be pretty well rested, you'd presume, by the time you get to that conference championship for whoever they then were to play. So that plus, obviously, the advantage of home court, if you're a believer in that being a factor, then... certainly going to help them, given they've got the one seed.
But I also can see in this way, I think I have them 4th now, is that I could see like Luka pushing the Suns to 7 just by being like a complete machine.
Psycho, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that would be absolutely outstanding.
I'd love to see it.
He really needs to win a series, though.
Yeah. Yeah, he's true. He's very true.
But like, he has played against the 2 best wing defenders.
Oh, yeah. I don't blame him for the Clippers, but he's going to get a matchup.
Who's going to get? He's going to get Utah this year, probably. Most definitely.
Yeah, he's probably going to get Utah.
He has to beat them.
Bless you. He has to beat them. Yeah.
None of us rate them.
Utah have literally their weakness is wing defenders.
Mm.
Like, Ingles is gone. O'Neal's. It's either Royce O'Neal, Bogdanovic.
Can't defend.
Yeah, and then you've got like, you know, Mitchell's undersized, Conley's undersized, and then Gobert can't play in a playoffs. Like, he's no one blames him for the previous 2 series so far, but if he can't get out of the first round this year, given he's not going to be playing them, then people will all of a sudden start to look at those like first series as like, yeah, maybe he's just not able to elevate a team in a playoff, even though he's statistically been amazing.
Agreed. Well, yeah, well done, boys. That was a good 4. My final little segment, it's a little bit of a game. So I'm going to list, I've got 8 names here that are out of contract the end of this year, or they've got like a player option, but like either way.
Yeah.
I'm literally just going to say the name. We'll go Yags Benny.
Yeah.
So, yeah, obviously. And then we'll just basically say like whether they'll be at the same team that they are now or if they'll move.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And if we think they move, shall we just guess a team that they might be on?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Zach LaVine.
He'll be on the Bulls next year.
Bulls.
James Harden.
He'll be on the 76ers next year.
76ers.
Bradley Beal.
Ooh.
He'll be gone. I don't know where though.
I think he loves Washington. I think he stays.
Damian Lillard.
Oh, he'll be gone.
He has to go. For his own like well-being. Go on with a chip, me boy. My favourite player.
But who's got something to get him with?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Nick out.
Let me see some teams.
I mean, that would be my wet dream if he was on the Knicks.
Denver.
That's...
I like
They go and pair him with Jokic.
Dame, Murray, and...
No. I think they'd trade Murray and Porter or something. Get off Porter as well.
And Campazzo.
And then go Dame and Jokic.
Yep. Kyrie Irving.
He's gone.
Gone.
I see Simmons and Durant being a really good fit together. And the Nets going...
Just to get some more
We can get a better... A team that has way more chemistry.
Yeah.
And build like that. Around that. Because they might have the 2 superstars already.
Benny?
Kyrie's on the Knicks next year.
Really, honestly, I disagree.
The Knicks trade RJ in the house, and then I give up on basketball.
I think KD likes Kyrie too much. What about he's probably the worst player to put around Simmons. I was about to say, like, they offer you Kyrie for Julius, straight up.
I'll do that. Get Julius out of town.
But still only play half games.
He's still in New York, yeah.
Yeah. Come on. DeAndre Ayton.
He's not in Phoenix. Yeah. They're not paying him.
Yeah, I don't think he stays. He'll crave that max, which he... Does he deserve it or not?
I'll go...
Dallas?
Yeah, maybe.
What about if the Suns win a chip?
Yeah, I think he'd definitely leave at that point.
Leave?
No, they'd pay him.
Yeah, can they pay? Oh, actually, yeah, they'd probably
pay him. Yeah, can they pay if he wins?
Pay up.
I think
you have to.
Yeah.
No, but their owner is so cheap. The two that come to mind that need a center are Charlotte and Toronto.
If he went to Charlotte, they become very interesting.
I think I might say Toronto because I've got pieces to move for it.
Yeah, suits their kind of like mold.
Or that height.
Yeah.
Nick Nurse would like
Miles Bridges.
Still on Charlotte.
Yeah, I think so. I think Charlotte are building something special. Yeah, yeah, they could be next year's Memphis.
If they wanted to move something, they could like package up. They got like Book Knight, the draft.
They need to like upgrade Plumlee. The rest of the starting file is pretty nice.
Move like Book Knight and then like Kelly Oubre and package them up.
And for, PJ like, Washington.
He's actually right though.
He's good.
They could get off Gordon Hayward if they needed some salary. Yeah. Because he's probably not in their future.
I always thought he's a nice veteran, like Simmons or something said like, there was always that talk of Hayward was meant to go from Boston to Indiana. And then...
Turner?
Yeah, so it's Charlotte getting Turner.
Someone
was saying that like to play with LaMelo, apparently in like real life, if you're watching, his transition is so fast. So you can't have like an immobile center. Yeah. It needs to be like some quick center.
Yeah. Definitely.
Like, you know, who would actually be good for them? Like James Wiseman.
Ayton would be good.
Yeah, or like Wiseman would be very good for him, I reckon.
Last two, Colin Sexton.
Stays in the Cavs as their like six man supercharged guy.
No. Now package.
Archie's gone, yeah.
Packaged up with like LeVert and something else, and they reek of a Beal location, I reckon.
Yeah, no, definitely.
If they got Beal next year, they
could get Donovan as well.
That was my next one. Donovan Mitchell.
He's out of there. Oh, gone.
Yeah, he's gone.
Because Utah implodes in the playoffs.
Yeah, Utah gets swept by Doncic 50 a game, and then.
Gobert
and him beef up.
Yeah, you can't move Gobert, so then Donovan gets the fuck out of there.
You know, I'd love Donovan at Dallas.
What about New York?
Yeah, Donovan's got a bit of the Knicks in him. Yeah.
Dallas, Donovan and Doncic would be pretty thick.
You'd have to give up Brunson.
Yeah.
Brunson's
a free agent at the end of the year. They can't sign him.
Oh, true.
You'd have to give up like every asset.
Brunson's another one, the Celtics. I mean, Bill always says that.
Nice tips, boys.
Thank you. That was a good game.
Thank you very much for coming on the podcast again. It's going to be a final 3 months of NBA that I'm so keen for.
Very keen.
Lots of league pass. But thank you very much, as always, for coming on. And love to see you on the next episode.
Thanks for having us.